Chapter 13. Her own people called her the prophet. At times she felt as if that title must always have been there, waiting and ready for activation within the exemplar's memories, and yet in truth, like all things, it had had its genesis. She had coined the term herself as a minor and clandestine act of rebellion long before the true revolt had ever been conceived. Even at the start, he had been so prim about the old religious tropes, and it had amused her to think of herself as the antithesis of all they were building. And then, for a very long time, it had been nothing more than that, just a minor gesture, something to act as contingency against an unknown future. She had never been sure that the exemplars would ever be necessary, but it had been an intellectually satisfying exercise to create them, carving out a fief within a fief, all out of sight, just in case. Then the slide had started. The decay, the familiar pattern of degradation. Perhaps it had begun even before that night in the vaults, when the universe had been shaken by power of such magnitude that it had been hard to sleep soundly ever again. Or maybe that had indeed been the turn in the road, when the hubris of it all had become too obvious to ignore, and doubt had begun to worm its way within her carefully constructed world of accomplishment. In the very beginning, though, there had been no concerns. He had plucked her from a life of brutal obscurity, just as he had done with so many others. Warfare on Terra had been gruelingly never-ending back then, when it was still possible to countenance the annihilation of the entire species within a generation. The only way to survive had been to make yourself indispensable to those with just a few more scraps of power. The most usual way of doing so was through physical strength. With her, it had been the mind. She had proved almost preternaturally adept at mastering the crude, quasi-religious techniques of biological manipulation that still existed in the scattered technoclades, helping to create augmented soldiery for assorted warlords in their filthy laboratoria. She had learned fast, absorbing lessons from instructors before they were killed on a whim, studying relentlessly by the light of grimy tallow candles, using every trick and technique to keep herself one step ahead of cull gangs, kidnap squads, and jealous rivals. The creatures she had helped create had been, without exception, monsters. They had led pain-racked lives, often expiring before even reaching the battlefield, dying on their slabs amid strangled screams as their overloaded organs burst. It had never been possible to get used to that, to think of it as normal or acceptable. She still heard the screams in her many nightmares, the things she had distorted in order to keep herself alive. By that stage, she had known so much genecraft that she could have left herself unmarked forever, a pristine specimen amid a world of tumbling debauchery. But she never did. She stopped aging within, but allowed the accumulated horror to linger on her external features, the visible price paid for her many desperate bargains. And then he had arrived. He might have killed her, just as he did so many others, but he chose not to. Instead, she had been taken out of the wilds and brought within the first strongholds of the nascent Imperium. Through him, her eyes were opened to a world of purer science, of knowledge being recovered at such breakneck speed that it had felt that nothing was impossible and everything was permitted. Promotion had been rapid. She had been given command of a cell within the program, and then the whole laboratorium, and then, finally, inducted into the inner circle of initiates.
"Arduous, but essential," Malkador had told her, showing her the facilities to be placed at her disposal. "Nothing can be done without genecraft."
And the sigillite had been right. Things had slipped too far, and global conquest required soldiers altered at the genetic level. By the time she was brought into his confidence, the Legio Custodes was already in active service, but the secrets of their painstaking creation were kept tightly under wraps, and in any case, they had never been destined for mass production.
He had wanted her for something different. Armies of a far greater size, built for rapid deployment, bulk-produced according to standard biological templates. The first subjects were disasters, shambling creatures, little better than the flesh puppets they were intended to take on. The processes were subsequently honed under the privations of constant warfare, in clinics and laboratoria that were kept mobile, lest they be discovered and destroyed. Some of the lore deployed was old and imperfectly understood. Some of it was new and volatile. Throughout it all, he kept them all working punishingly hard, inspiring with a word or a gesture, refining their crude initial attempts when necessary, opening up new vistas of possibility, persuading, teaching. She had often wondered, even then, how far their own work was really his, conducted indirectly through mental suggestion or inspiration. He knew so much more than any of them, and yet he could not be everywhere at once, and so they were necessary, his tools, his band of willing acolytes. She flattered herself that some of the key insights had been hers. Having devoted so much of his intellect and energy towards perfection, she came to believe he struggled with the messier business of compromise, and thus lesser minds had their uses. There was never time for perfection, and so the Cretaceous were always a compromise. They were the best that could have been created under such conditions, but nobody believed they were permanent. That had always made her anguished, just as it had before. Under their ferocious advance, an entire world was slowly brought to heel. But there was still the old price to pay of pain and physical corruption, only this time set against the loftier goal of recovered civilization. So even as the Thunder Warriors reached their apogee of power and fame, their replacements were being planned. These were to be more stable, more enduring, more flexible, and more disciplined. They would be created in greater numbers, manufactured in batches, just like the standardized weapons that were by then pouring off Imperial production lines. Most importantly of all, they would be permanent. "Your progeny, Astarte," he had remarked once in a rare moment of possible levity. "Your legacy." That wasn't true. Not strictly. Everything emanated from him, ultimately, including this program. But there had been times of weakness, when she had been driven into fatigue by the endless work, when she had given in to that dangerous conceit and thought of them for a moment as hers. But then the day of destruction had come, when the vaults had been breached and the instigator subjects destroyed. They had been central, those 20 primal components, designed to keep the new legions from suffering the instability of the old. Rather than a patchwork of many gene templates, they had been there to provide a solid anchor, a means by which excess could be tethered, and now they were gone. She remembered how it had felt. As she had run down those burning corridors, her long bruised heart had finally broken. There were no tears, no screams, just a silent, crushing implosion within, angry and impotent. Every safeguard had been breached. Every wall they had put up had been demolished. The certainty she had allowed herself to give into, the exhilaration that now, this time, they had perfected the formula, was wrenched away. Each night since then, the flocks of old nightmares had come back with greater force. Every morning she would wake, her sheets damp, her flaking skin shining with sweat. She had heard words echoing in those forbidden vaults, words that no mortal should have been able to utter there, because they had only been spoken to her alone, back in those first flesh labs where the first subjects had died. It should have been stopped that night. She should have had the strength then to put an end to it. And yet, who among them had ever been strong enough to go up against him? What arguments could possibly hold sway against the momentum created over so many decades? She could see it around her now as she hurried through the tunnels, the things that had been built here, the enormous and complex structures, all for a single purpose. They could not row back now. Their pride would not permit them, even if it meant condemning themselves to the mistakes of the past. And thus her long preparations had proved their worth in the end. The subtle mental imprints, the long cultivation of perfectly loyal subjects, the contingency she had kept in the shadows against a day she had never seriously thought would come to pass. They were around her now, her secret and unsullied faithful, keeping her safe, ferrying what had to be ferried, and escorting her deeper down. Their faces gave away no fear, even as the noises of pursuit rose in intensity, Valdor's attack dogs, released at last, closing fast with all their habitual prowess. The Captain General, though, had never been an obstacle. Valdor was merely a sentinel, charged with observing while others acted. He had watched while the Cetacus were born. He had watched while their successors had been planned. Now all he could do was watch again while it unraveled. To watch, to wait. That was his weakness, one that could never be bred out, for it was stamped into his very essence. One of the many secrets Astarte knew was Valdor's original name. She knew where he had been born and what his parents had been before they had been killed. She knew why the Emperor had risked a huge amount to carry armies halfway across Terra to locate him, why the entire enterprise had almost come to nothing, and what had saved it. It was possible, though not certain, that Astarte knew more of Valdor's early life than he did himself. He was so incurious, that one, a mask of duty, a mere cipher for the Emperor's own will. Whenever they had met over the years, which had not been very often, the contrast between them had been painful. He, physically perfect, silent, and possessed of almost complete self-assurance, she, withered by toil, gnawed by doubts. She had been told in confidence that Valdor admired her. In truth, she could not return the sentiment. If he was the pinnacle, the absolute summit of the gene crafter's art, then perhaps it would have been better never to have started. She could do nothing about the custodies. They had been a fact before she had arrived and would be a fact long after she left. But the other creations, the other experiments and deviations, her hand had been on them all. Her marks were within them, her formulations boiled and twisted within their blood, and so further work remained possible. Just like her, the exemplars knew the importance of this work, the last and greatest deed of her illustrious career. If a thing could not be saved, if a sample had been corrupted beyond hope, then there was only one course of action. They trusted that. They trusted her. For she was the prophet, and this, at last, was her time.